Welcome to the Sit Down Podcast, real lives, real conversation, and I am your host, Icy. Now today we're going to be talking with an amazing entrepreneur by the name of Florence Adepoju. She took her love for science and turned it into a cosmetic range that is literally taking the world by storm. She's been picked up by the likes of New York Times, Forbes, Elle, Teen Vogue, Vogue Italia. She's got her items in Boots as well as on her own website. She has it in Harvey Nichols. She's worked with the likes of Foot Locker, Nike. She has accolades upon accolades, but me, I want to find out, who is the woman behind all the success? Who is the woman behind the brand? And that's what we do at the Sit Down. They say if you want to find out the core of a person, come and listen to the Sit Down. So make sure wherever you're listening from, you subscribe. And if you want to, feel free to leave a review afterwards. We want to know what's working for you and what's not. Without further ado, let's get into it. This is the Sit Down with Florence Adepoju. Thank you so much for doing this, man. Like I said, offline, that I've been wanting to do this for a while, just because I just saw, you know, when we did that photo shoot, that video shoot, years ago. What was it? What year was that then, probably?
It feels like it was like at least 9 years ago.
And I was on a video shoot, and my manager at the time got, you know, a makeup artist, and I was like, makeup? I need makeup to do this? And I remember you came, and we just had a good chat. At the time, my wife was there as well.
Yeah.
But we weren't together. We were just friends
then. Oh, wow.
And then, I remember you just talking about you wanting to do a makeup brand and really pursue your passion. And to see how far it's come since then, it's just beautiful. And I really wanted to get you down and just explore that story and explore who you are as a person. So what we're going to do, we're going to kick off quickly, though, with I got some quick fire questions. So these are off the cuff. You don't even need to think of them. Just off the cuff. Let's see how you handle them. So the first one is, what's the last album you bought?
The last album I bought. See, I don't really buy albums anymore. But I bought... I'm trying to think. When was the last time Beyonce released an album? I bought Dre's Compton album. I bought that on Apple because it wasn't on Spotify.
So the old one?
No. The one that they released with the movie. So that was a couple of years ago.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Yeah, so I know I bought that. Because, I usually buy Beyonce's music, but, now I just, get a free trial on Tidal and it.
Anyway, come on. All right, next question. Are you a morning person or night owl?
Night owl, but yeah. I'm trying to be a morning person.
What kind of hours would you work?
I feel like I get a massive energy boost at midnight, and then I can just go to 3-4 in the morning. So now I'm trying to sleep before midnight so that I wake up early
and work.
Yeah.
Up to, yeah, okay, cool. Let's see, planting or plantain?
Plantain. All the way.
What is your favorite boy band of all time?
Ooh, boy band of all time. I'm gonna say the wrong answer. Boys to Men.
Okay. Last book you read?
Last, as in completed?
Completed, yeah.
Okay, so Becoming by Michelle Obama. It is such an amazing book. It starts off quite slow, in my opinion, but it ends up so good. And I love the way she talks about her family.
Nice.
She's just very real and very open. Some good White House stories.
Did she dish a little bit of juice in there.
Yeah.
Dish the dirt.
Yeah, a little bit. Not too much, but in a Michelle Obama way. Very classy.
Let's see. Favorite Netflix series right now?
Oh, see, I literally just got rid of Netflix.
Really?
I've kind of gone off it and on it over, because whenever I have a Netflix account, I just, my work rate reduces a lot. I really enjoyed Narcos, the Mexican one.
Okay, the Mexican one. All right, last one. Favorite item in your wardrobe?
Favorite item in my wardrobe? I don't know, bags. I really like bags. I want to wear bags.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, let's get into it then. So you've got a pile of envelopes that I've given you.
Okay.
And I want you to open up envelope number 4 and read the quote.
Wow. It's not even in order, you know.
No.
Okay. Number 4. Okay. So much of my childhood wasted training me for cultural norms that mean nothing to me now. Wow, this is something I've tweeted.
Yes. So I wanna look at that. I wanna go way back.
Oh wow.
So just to look at your childhood. Sorry, Mom. what was your childhood like? What was that like?
Wow, okay, talking about my childhood, I would say it's so funny because I have such an appreciation for my childhood.
Yeah.
And all of me has made me who I am today, but I think, like, as a lot of, like, first gen, I'm from a Nigerian background, so I can obviously speak for my experiences, but I think it was just this kind of, like, you're growing up. I grew up in East London. Yeah. And then as a teenager moved to Essex. And, like, in school, I really wanted to assimilate as much as possible. Mm. And I'm a little bit of a people pleaser as well.
Yeah.
So I wanted to, not only did I want to fit in, but I wanted people to like me.
Yeah.
But then, like, at home, there was, like, so much. My parents were really strict. And, like, we started off going to, like, CAC churches, which are very traditional. Like, yeah. Some at the time, like, only did services in Yoruba. So, like, literally.
Is it,
like,
a white garment?
No, I didn't go to a white garment church. But it was very, like, very cultural. Mm. And it's so funny because, like, even, like, I can, like, read and, like, understand Yoruba. And that was because, like, in services where they weren't speaking English, I'd start reading the Yoruba Bible and then I'd ask my mom to explain words to me.
Yeah.
So it was just such this, like, cultural infusion at home. But then, like, and me, like, trying again to, like, please, especially when I was really young, like, trying to, like please my parents and, like, please aunties and please everyone. Oh, yes. And then at school, sure. Trying to be, and then so I think when I and I was a very good child, like and I'm the eldest as well, so, like, and I've got two Same. Younger brothers, so very, like, caring, and I'm still very kind of, like, caring and smotherly to my brothers now, but just this kind of, like, you know, I want to be the perfect big sister, the perfect daughter, the perfect, like, child. And then I think as I grew and then got into teenage years, then I just became, like, quite bad because it was just kind of like, this is too much.
Yeah,
too much pressure. Up, yeah. And then, but at the same time, just, like, balancing it, because I was always quite academically gifted.
Mm-hmm.
So I always got good grades, but then I'd still, like, get into trouble and get into fights and all this kind of little like gnarly things.
Yeah.
Up until I think university actually was the first point where I had, like, real independence to just, like, be myself.
Yeah.
And then, like, then I became a less aggressive person.
Yeah, you didn't
because
have to, really.
Cause I could just express myself. So yeah, so I literally know the mindset I was in.
Yeah,
when I tweeted that.
Yeah.
But I think it was just like, there's a lot of amazing things about Nigerian culture, but I think it can be very restrictive, especially when it comes to the female child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think growing up, my understanding of, like, especially what it meant to be a woman was, like, you're just going to be this, like, incredible, like, server, like,
yeah.
This, like, you know, and that's what I was as a child, like, cooking for everybody, cleaning everything, looking after everyone, making sure everyone's, like, happy. Whereas now so much of my life is, like, building my own ideals that aren't around all these kind of, like, cultural things.
Yeah,
that
yeah, I like that. What would you say was your happiest moment?
As a child or now?
As a child.
As a child, I'm a really extroverted person. I love being around people. Mm. And during the holidays and on the weekends, actually, my parents just, like, shipped us off to, like, summer school and Saturday school. And I loved like summer school specifically, like I remember it was like in South London, and like we used to go to like Burgess Park to play, and just being around all the other kids who were the same as me, because they were mostly Nigerian kids, like in London, like we all had like the same stories. I remember us putting like newsletters together and like printing out Ashanti lyrics and all this random stuff. But I just remember being so happy because I was just around other people like me, and we were just having fun, and they understood me. We could all pronounce each other's names.
Yeah.
It was just this kind of like weird like environment where we were just like protected from the rest of
London. And does that kind of translate to now? Do you find you feel happiest amongst friends?
Definitely. So when I'm just with my people, when I'm with my friends, when I can just like let go and just like have fun and be myself. But at the same time as well, I think now I appreciate being alone as well, that I didn't so much when I was younger. So like when I was younger, I used to get into so much trouble because I would be out every single night of the week, and like I'd come home at like 10 p.m. in my school uniform, and my parents would be like, like, you know, what are you doing? I'm just like, I've just been out where?
And
just like roaming the streets literally with my friends because I just wanted to be out. Whereas now I'm just like, nah, I just want to go home.
Yeah. Did you have a childhood crush?
Yeah, probably. I really loved Usher.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember getting his 8701 album.
Yeah, I love that album.
I begged my auntie to buy me, and she did.
What about like, obviously, you have a love for hip hop. What was your favorite kind of song back then?
Favorite song? I don't know. I feel like I can't think of a specific song. I remember though, like my cousin had the Snoop Dogg album where he was like an illustration of a dog, and then there was like a brick wall, and I remember loving that album artwork. As a child. But in terms of songs, I can't really think of a specific song that I loved as a child.
Mm.
Oh, actually, no, yeah, that's not really hip hop though. There's a track called West Side. I can't remember who it's by, but it's more of a
TQ.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
like my cousin had that on tape. Literally. So I remember, like, you know when you used to like use the back of the pen to
tape? And you had to sometimes tie it together.
Literally.
You got to put the little paper in the slots.
Literally. So I remember like rewinding that back so I could just listen to that track over and over again.
Yeah. What would you say elements of your childhood have now kind of made you the woman you are now? That you actively say,
I think the colour. So at the moment we're planning my mum's 60th birthday party, and so we're looking through like old photos, and like every single photo there's like someone in bright blue or bright purple or bright red. Like even if it could be the lipstick or the material or just like the fabric of the curtains of the living room. And like now I'm like, okay, this, when I look at that and I look at my brand's Instagram page, I can see like where the inspiration comes from.
Definitely. I like that. What about in terms of your, I guess, what you observe, like things that you took, maybe that you saw from your mom, what you saw from your dad, their ethics or morals?
Like both of my parents are super hardworking, and to be an immigrant, you have to be. It just comes with the territory. And so I think that's definitely something I've taken from them. And also, funnily enough, my mum's really a people's person, and she's really good at like connecting with people. And like she always taught me, like she taught me like to be respectful, but she was very like specific with it. So like in like Nigerian cultural norms, like who did I need to like call ma, or you know, to kneel to when I'm greeting them. And she was just always like, I'd give her, I remember like giving her examples of settings and being like, okay, but what if I met this person? And she'll be like, okay, in this situation, this is what you do. And when I think about how I approach things now, I'm very much like, in what scenarios do I act a certain way to make people feel like welcomed or respected or connected? And I definitely think that's something I took from her.
Do you know what that is? I think that's, I'm going to have a child, isn't it? So just that setup you gave, just that scenario you gave, is so, I think that is so important, because in Nigerian culture sometimes the norm is given, but not the explanation.
Exactly.
You just kneel.
Exactly.
Just, or you just, but you as a child, you will do it if you understand.
That's the thing.
And I don't think that's given.
No, it's so important. And that's one thing as well. Like, only as I grew up did I understand that, like, my mum was a bit different to others in the sense that I was a child that always asked why. And I always got an explanation.
Wow.
And like, obviously now you see the memes and the jokes that everyone gives, and people are always like, oh yeah, like, parents don't ever explain. And I'm like, oh, my mom explained. So I really appreciate it, because because I was like a really, like, even like it, though it was me, I know I was an annoying child.
Why?
Especially like now I have like two godsons.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, okay, I can get how like children can like really like get onto you about things.
Yeah.
And I know I was that child who was just like, no, tell me, mom, I want to know.
Yeah. What would you say your relationship is like with your parents now?
It's really good. Like, I live at home, so I've had to become close to my parents. Yeah. And it's really funny because, like, as I think, because like they were really strict growing up, like when I got into teenage years, I was like, I can't wait till I leave home. Like, I just don't want to be around them, and like, you know, just building up all this angst. And then I moved out for uni, and then I lived in Belgium for a year.
Yeah.
And then when I came back and I knew I wanted to start my business, I decided to like move back home to reduce my costs. So it was just kind of like, okay, I'm going to be in this environment with them, so I need to get on with them. And I think now that, like, it's weird, like, as you get older, you just realize that like your parents are just like people. When you're younger, you think they're this like superhero, like next level thing. Yeah, but it's just like, nah, they're just like regular like people just trying to do their stuff, dealing with their own things. And I think, like, I'm glad, like, at first it, like, just because of like the pressure of seeing everyone kind of like move on and like whatever, get jobs or move out or whatever, I kind of felt like maybe I was a bit stunted. Whereas now I really appreciate the fact that, like, I'm around my family and people who like genuinely love me and care about me. That's nice. And it's nice.
And I think that's important for you to kind of get to that place, because some people, like you said, they'll be so consumed. I'm at home with my parents.
Yeah.
What am I doing? How come I haven't bought my house?
Yeah.
How come I'm not married? How come this and this? And it's like, I guess, like you said, because they're people, they might also just want you around as well, and just to chill with you. And they always say that adults or parents, they're just big children.
Yeah,
they're just children, but they're bigger, and with that growth has still, there's still elements of their childhood in it, things that they need to work out and things that they need to kind of deal with. And I guess it's just understanding that you're both, I guess it happens more as you grow older, that you both understand that we're just adults, and
literally,
sometimes we get it right, sometimes we get it wrong.
Literally.
How do they actually, how do they like view like your success, and how are they with all that?
They're so supportive. Nice. And they're so, it's so funny because I always say that, like, when something good happens, like, I experience the positive emotion through my parents. So when I tell them, like, oh, I've just done this, seeing their excitement and seeing their enthusiasm about it makes me like, like, this is really good.
Could you feel, do you feel you do take time to stop and smell the roses?
I'm trying to a lot more this year. I think you're always thinking about the next thing. So it's very hard to just be like, oh, I've done this, when it's not like your target. So you're always thinking about the target. And as you inch closer to the target, then you like extend it and you stretch it and you stretch it. Whereas now I'm like, trying to be like, oh wow, like, I'm actually winning, like, this is good, like, I'm going in the right direction, as opposed to like, I need to do more. There's always more to do, even though there always is more to do.
And and I think you have to be present for a second, because you know unfortunately, like, the cadet pass and everything, those kind of things show you that even on the race to the top,
it could
go at any moment, you know. 100%. So if there's anything that you were working so hard on and it works out, let's celebrate that. Let's go for a lunch, let's do whatever.
Exactly. And I think, like, just to touch on the cadet point a little bit as well, is like, even when you feel like you haven't like made it, quote unquote, you're still making an impact.
So,
and when you see the impact that he's made on, like, so I think I only like discovered his music last year, and I completely fell in love with it, and I still felt it. even though I didn't know him as long as like his like biggest fan,
yeah.
but it's just like, wow, you really put out something meaningful.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think people forget that when you're doing meaningful work, you're impacting people. Mm-hmm. Just because you haven't impacted 100 million people
yeah.
doesn't mean you haven't touched the lives of the people that you're like putting, like that are experiencing whatever you're doing.
That's what I try to say, that it's always impact. I feel it's impact over numbers.
Yeah.
Because and all the you know, the tweets and the posts, nobody was I never heard one person say, oh my gosh, the amount of streams he had, or
yeah, exactly.
They were just like, oh, he impacted my life in this
exactly.
way. And it's so I really try and live by that now, that
yeah.
what impact can I make on a daily basis yeah. that I, when I die, it has to matter.
Yeah,
it like my funeral, it's, you're gonna have to find a yeah. building that can hold these people.
Exactly.
Because my life, it really, really impacted, has to matter.
Exactly. You know?
All right, well, let's open up envelope number one.
Okay, I'm going to have a sip of water before I
No problem.
It's so funny because, like, sometimes I post, like, wild things. And then I look back and I'm like, I don't even think like this anymore.
Well, look at it like this. At least I'm getting to you and it's not, like, the Daily Mail
exactly,
or something else.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
This is so funny, and I know exactly why I do this. Just like, yeah, yeah, I love my family so much, by the way. So for everybody listening, this tweet says, family really know how to make you feel like you ain't S-word.
Where did that sentiment come from? What was happening?
I probably just had an argument with someone. No, I had a conversation with a member of my family, and I won't out them. Mm. Like, it wasn't like my nuclear family. It was part of my extended family. And they made a statement about me that just I knew wasn't true.
Mm.
But in the moment, like, I didn't respond because, like, I didn't know how to respond in a respectful way. And, like, now that, like, I do have a hold on my emotions, I'm more someone who just, like, lets things go in the moment.
Yeah.
And then, like, yeah, then tweets about it.
That's good.
So I was just like, ah. Like, you know, and I think also, like, your family know everything that's good about you. They know also more of what's bad about you than like people in general.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes in heated moments they can just really like pull literally like just twist the knife in a bit, and it's just like, oh, okay, damn, thank you for like undressing me.
Who would you say you are behind the brand?
What do you
mean? Who is actually Florence Adeposi?
I was thinking about this the other day because like I had a meeting and I was saying that like I tried to be careful to not be a caricature of my brand, because my brand is so hip and so cool, as in MBM Flow, and it's very like it's in your face and it's very confident, whereas I think I'm a little bit more of like a geek, but I think geeks are really cool, right? But I'm more kind of like I want to know everything about everything. I want to understand how I want to know all the cool people. Like, yeah. I was listening to an interview with like a really big director whose name has completely escaped me, but he was just saying that like he is a groupie of successful people, and that's like why he manages to get talent and manages them and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, yeah, actually I relate to that sentiment. Like I think I'm a groupie of things. Mm-hmm. Like I really get into it and I get really charged up by it, but I think like my brand and the products that I create, they just exist to be cool.
Yeah.
So they're not like, it's not a direct influence of anything else, whereas I am influenced by everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's really important that, and 'cause so I think sometimes there's an expectation that I should like dress a certain way or look a certain way. And like, I'm a bit of a chatty patty. I'm not gonna walk into a room and just be like quiet in the corner because yeah. I wanna be cool. I'm gonna start chatting to everyone and yeah. I'm gonna do my thing and I'm gonna make sure that I'm my full self, because I'm only able to create things by putting myself in all these situations.
Yeah.
But I think it's hard because at the same time, like, you want to self-improve. So it's like, what parts of you are holding you back and what parts of you are moving you forward.
Yeah, 100%.
And so I'm just like, okay, in my like extrovertness and in my want to connect with people and meet people, am I just wasting time?
Mm.
Or am I actually like doing things and making connections yeah. that are useful?
Yeah. What would you say are your strengths then?
Chatting. That's a big strength. I think I'm really good at developing products. My products are dope. Everybody should buy it. I think I'm really good at like forming connections. Wow, it's hard to think of things you're good at, you know. I'm good at science, yeah. So there's a bit of a technical element to me.
Yes.
I think those are like the three like main points, like communication.
You know, it's interesting you said that line specific. It's hard to actually pinpoint the strengths, because I think I always felt that in school, like the way we've come through the education system, it's always been to focus on how we can do better.
Yeah.
So your essay gets marked and da 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 da, but here are the red
the
marks.
Points. Yeah.
And you just focus on the red marks, the red yeah. marks. How many points do you know, where you offer B or C, whatever the mm-hmm. grade is. And I think it's so important people just every so often take a step back and be like, what am I good at? What yeah. am I amazing at?
Yeah.
I know there's work to do, but what am I amazing at? And I think it just empowers you to then do those things.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
When you're in those situations, whether it's chatting, like you said, whether it's your science, you are untouchable.
Exactly.
You
know what I'm saying? Yeah.
What would you say you're weak at then? What are your some of your weaknesses?
Financial stuff. Numbers.
Does that show up in your business?
No.
No.
Like, because you just know it, and so you become a bit obsessed about it. And it has, like, to say no is to lie, because it has come up in my business.
Mm.
And so it's like, oh, okay, damn, I've been burnt here. And so going forward, I'm going to, like, make sure that that issue is addressed. 100%. So, yeah, no, definitely it has, especially early on when it's just, like, it's weird because I think when you create a product, you think, I'm going to make this incredible thing that I have in my mind. And so you make it and you show it to people and everybody thinks it's great. And you're like, okay, I'm going to be rich.
Yeah.
Like, I like it. Everybody I know likes it.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. And then but you don't realize that there's like core like principles around business that you have to get right.
Mm-hmm.
And finance is one of those core principles. So yeah, like it has like, now it's not a problem, like the way I've set it up, but that's after like five, almost 6 years of like making mistake after mistake 100%. After mistake. So yeah, finance. And even now I'm just like, don't get too comfy. Yeah. Like, still check in, because it's sometimes as well, it's easy to just drop the things that you like. I'm definitely someone who believes in like 10x in what you're good at and like really like honing in on those, but then also like you have to make sure that your weaknesses aren't being exploited either, like just by you missing them or by other people knowing that it's a weakness and trying to come in. So yeah, finance, I'd say, and just numbers in general. Like, I just like, it's not that I don't have an understanding of it, I'm just not into it, and so I just tend to like be a bit slack on it. I think like quite like messy in terms of like actually messy, but also like in my thought processes. So I'm very like start one thing, start the other thing. So I have to like constantly like take time to come back and make sure that I'm like That's going fun. Through and everything that I'm working on. What else? Just like exposing myself. I can't cook.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I can.
No, actually, forgive me. Not really, but. Yeah, go.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's something that I'm proud that I can't do. But I can. There's certain things that like my mum made sure I knew how to make, and there's things that I think I'm the best at. So I think my like jollof rice is amazing.
Yeah.
But I just don't have an interest in it. So again, like I've just not developed it because I've just not had an interest, and there's only so many hours in the day.
In a day. What would you say? What judgments have you had to overcome? Stepping into your role, but also just as a woman.
Yeah, I think just thinking that I don't know. I'm trying to think of a way to describe this. I think allowing all the excuses for why it's difficult as a woman to like become things, because I think like the more thought you give to something, the more power you give it. So like often I'm asked in interviews, like, what experiences have you had as a woman in business or as a black woman in business? Yeah. And it's just like, I'm sure that I've had experiences that are like specific to those things, but for anyone in business, like, it's tough. So I'm not gonna give an excuse and say like, oh, you know, but because like that person yeah. didn't, like, you know, give me that opportunity because I was a black woman, like, that's the reason why nothing happened the way. Yeah. No, I'm gonna do everything it takes to make sure everything that I need happens. Yeah. And so, yeah, I completely forgot what the question
is. Oh, no, it's just that, what judgments you had, yeah. had to overcome.
Oh, so yeah. That's one. So that's it. It's just this idea of like, there's a reason why I can't do whatever it is that I want to do.
Mm.
And I think like through listening to other people's stories and seeing other people who were like similar to me make it, quote unquote, it's just like they did whatever it takes, that I've got to do whatever it takes. But I think sometimes when things don't work out or things are difficult, it's very easy to be like, oh, it's because I'm a woman.
Yeah.
Oops. And like, and they're really real things, because obviously like women go through like experiences specific to gender, and like we go through experiences that are specific to race.
Yeah.
But it's just like you need needing to have the attitude of like, it doesn't matter, I'm just gonna do it anyway.
Yeah, 100%. I like that. Let's go into envelope 5 and 2.
Okay. This better not be about my family. Oh, okay. I've got 2 over here. 5 is gone missing. Okay, 2. Thank you. Oh, okay. 5. There are so many implicit biases that hold women back in business. That was a good tweet. Everybody should retweet that.
Retweet that. And then number 2.
And number 2... this is a good one. I finally understand what Beyonce meant when she said diva is a female version of a hustler. Oh, I remember this moment. So good.
What happened then?
So good. So I wrote an email because I was negotiating something, and I just got into a very specific tone of voice, and I asked specifically for what I wanted. And I sent that email out, then like I read back and I was just like, oh, what a diva. And I was like, yeah, but like, I'm a hustler though. Like, I'm gonna get, because I was like essentially like negotiating an amount for a booking.
Yeah.
And I was just like, and the email pretty much said like, if you don't pay me this much, then I'm just not interested. And I was just like, yeah, like like that's how you be a hustler. Yeah. But then also at the same time, like the fact that even though it was me like asking for something that I want, I still saw myself as a diva. And I think that connects to the implicit biases yeah. thing, where it's just kind of like, if a man does it, he's a boss.
Yeah, yeah.
But if a woman does it, she's a diva. And that's mm-hmm. even me thinking about myself. So that's like messaging within myself yeah. that I need to like unpack
yeah.
so that I can make more money moves.
No, it's so true. And I think I tweeted this the other day about, because I'm gonna have a child, I'm more aware of like, we don't know if it's a girl or boy yet, but I'm becoming more aware of the different biases that are out there, and
yeah.
how, when we talk about things like white privilege,
yeah,
and how, you know, the goal is for white people to realize that you do have privilege.
Yeah,
I just realized that. Oh my gosh, but I have there's male masculine, privilege. There's male privilege, and I was like, oh my, there's things that are so easy or so accessible to me because I'm a male. And the biases that come with it. And
yeah.
so for me as a male asking for more as a book for a booking fee, you wouldn't bat an eyelid at that. Yeah, of course
you
would. No
one's going to call you a diva.
Yeah, he's just going after his value and his yeah. worth. And I think, like you said, we really have to start to unpack these signals and messages. All these things have been poured into us.
Yeah.
And we might even be acting on them without even
without realizing. Even thinking about it.
And because it's just like clockwork. And yeah. something like that, what you did in that email, but you were still able to reflect and think, no, but no.
Yeah.
I should be able to get what I am worth 100%. And my value, you know.
100%. And I think also, like, we need to see, like, I feel empowered to do the things that I do because I see other women in the positions that I want to be in. And I know that they've done whatever it takes. And I think the more we see women in positions of power yeah. or, like, negotiating for themselves, getting better deals, asking for a certain amount of money and getting it, the more like the title of diva doesn't need to exist anymore.
Yeah, it's just a norm.
Okay, it's not just a one size. Like, there's all these women all killing it in all these arenas, yeah, and they deserve to be paid. 100%. Like,
I agree. I've realized my male privilege. Let's get into your company. So, how do you successfully create a brand story?
Ooh, brand story. Successfully, I can only talk about what I've done. Okay?
Yeah, that's
I think like you have to know. There's so many things you need to know to create a brand. And especially like a story around it. So I guess you need to be solving a real problem.
Mm.
And when you think about what that problem is, like for me, it was quite easy because the problem I was solving was a personal problem in terms of like wanting makeup that was for women like me, quote unquote. So yes, knowing what the problem is, and then from that, reversing the process and thinking, okay, here's the problem. Who is it for? Who is that person? Yeah. What is her profile? Like, building profiles around it, and then like that leads you to your story. And like for me, because I like the way in which I went about my brand, like I didn't have a lot of experience. I just graduated. I literally did create a lab in my parents' shed at home, mm-hmm, and just started mixing it. So all these things were just things I had to do to create the solution.
Yeah.
And then slowly it became like the story.
Yes.
And then all the other influences around like why I was creating it added to that story. And like when I first started getting PR, because first of all I had a PR agency who kind of did a terrible job, because I would see the like pieces of press that they got me, but my brand was just beside every other brand and it just didn't stand out.
Yeah.
So when I started doing my PR myself, it was like, I'm actually going to tell people how it's going down and why I'm doing this. And I think sometimes we don't realize that like our individual stories are what, and the uniqueness around why we do the things we do is our story, and yes, is part of our brand story. So as much as I wanted it to be like a brand like with hip hop and culture infused into it, I wanted it to also be about this woman at home making it by herself, yeah, because she has no other option. And I think like when you think about hip hop and the stories that are told in hip hop, yeah, it's very DIY. It's very like I was just handing out CDs on the back of my car kind of story. So it's just like, yeah, so I'm gonna again like bring in my story into like the culture that is inspiring everything that I'm doing. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I just tried to position myself the way Mac has, exactly, or any other like major brand.
Beautiful. What would you say are some misconceptions about business?
That it's easy. I think everyone who doesn't run a business thinks it's like 100 times easier.
I'm just gonna quit my job and quit my 9-to-5.
Literally.
I'm gonna start my own business.
I'm just gonna do it.
Yeah.
I think everybody thinks that everyone else in business is making a lot more money than they are. And I think
also even being in business.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
So even like other people in business who are at the same size as me probably think I'm making X amount more than them, and then I'm looking at them thinking they're making X amount. And it's hard because like obviously PR and marketing is so important to the growth of your business, but it's just so important to just like not get lost in it, and not, because I think especially when it's things that you can't control. I can't control how much anybody else is making, so I should just focus on hitting my targets and being happy for them and whatever they're doing and whatever lessons I can pull out of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I like, I'm very like interested in like retail at the moment because it's changing so much, and just retail in general. And like there's like I'm subscribed to some like industry like newsletters, and on one month it's like, oh, this store is like, you know, fastest growing in their category, and the next month the exact same store is going bankrupt. So you literally don't know what's happening
behind
but
the scenes.
I think but people just see like, oh, you know, they have 1,000 stores in the high street, they must be rolling in, not knowing that they're like a couple of days away from the whatever situation they're going to end up in. So, I think that's one. And I think, yeah, just the ease of it. I think that's the biggest one, because even I find when I like try to advise people, and not only so much that it's easy, but that there's a shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that my business is right now has taken me over 5 years to do. Mm-hmm. And so when I am like mentoring or speaking to like new, like brand new brands that want to be in like all the retail locations that I'm in or have all the press that I've had, it's like it's gonna take you, it might not take you as long as it's taken me, but it's gonna take some time.
Yeah.
And I think people like give it a month or a couple of months and they don't get the results that they want, and then they just give up, as opposed to like actually taking the time that's needed
to get there. Yeah,
100%.
What would you then say would be, in all that toil, in all that struggle, what's been one of your proudest moments? Not one that was imposed on you,
yeah,
but one that you, a win that was for you in your heart.
Do you know what, the last weekend's been a massive win for me. We had a beauty pop-up in Foot Locker,
yeah,
and that was a really big win, because when I first started the brand, like Foot Locker would have been the perfect partner for anything, absolutely anything. Oh, even if they were just like, we just want to put you on our Instagram, I'd be like, yeah, go on, thank you. But I think when I started my brand and I told people that I wanted it to be like hip-hop inspired and I had all these ideas, I just got a lot of pushback, because like people were just like, this isn't normal. What even is a hip hop inspired brand? And I think people forget, like when I started, like I had zero followers, I had zero customers, I had this like old raggedy Big Cartel website. Like I wasn't like, I had no like accolades to show that I could make anything.
Yeah.
And I was just a student, like any like student out there. So coming with this big idea of like, yeah, like I want to create lipsticks for like sneaker culture and all this kind of, and I tried to do loads of different things. Like I remember I did like the Crepe City trade show for like 2 years in a row. The nice. Second year, like it was so hot, all my lipsticks melted. So I was like, I'm not doing that again. But there were so many ways I tried to like infuse like sneaker culture into what I was doing, and it just didn't work out. And so to get to a point where it's like, oh, now I'm like actually in Foot Locker, which is like one of the kings of sneaker culture, especially when it comes to retail, and be able to be in that space, and then from that like get other opportunities. Now I'm like, do you know what, I want my brand to have its own sneaker one day, because I can now put that there, because I finally got into the arena. Yeah. And it, even though it's taken me so long.
And was that you approaching them or them approaching you?
They approached me.
Yeah. Oh, that's yeah. even beautiful.
So yeah,
because that's the leverage,
get your
power.
Brand right, and then it will
come to you,
literally.
What has been your biggest L?
Ooh.
Your biggest loss, and you were just like, I'm gonna give this up, this is no.
See, I have that experience so often. My biggest L, I'm trying to think which one is the biggest. Like I can't think of like a specific like thing, but I know like the moment when I felt like I didn't want to do it anymore the most was when I like had everything in line to do a partnership with a really big retailer to make a massive
to
order
do
a partnership with a retailer that had like hundreds of doors. I designed the whole collection, like it was literally like, I just need you to send me a piece of paper saying that you're ordering this amount of goods, and then I'm good. And it was one of those like, if this order comes through, my life will change. That's it. Like, hey. I've gone clear.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I will, you know, I will send out the press release that has the numbers as the first word kind of thing. And then I just got like, I think it was an email, and they were just like, yeah, we're not interested in doing this anymore. And then I was just like, I don't want to do it. Like, what? What is this life? Like, I don't want to do this anymore.
How far was that into starting?
So that was about a year and a bit ago.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was just like, I think also because of the work, like I had so many sleepless nights putting presentations together, like talking to factories, just so much work went into like this big pitch. And I think also when you listen to like podcasts of like other entrepreneurs, they're always like, you have this big moment and then all the doors open, and then that's how they grow. So for me, I just really, really believed that that was going to be my big moment, and it wasn't. And so I really had to like pick myself up off the floor and just be like, opportunities don't just only come around once.
Yeah.
It's going to come around again. So like when it comes around again, be ready. But it was a very slow, long process of like, I'm done with this business.
With the lipsticks that you started off with, I just loved when I saw it. I remember seeing the branding, the colours and everything. And I guess the question of on people's lips must have been, okay, you've got the lipstick thing, what else you got?
Yeah.
And so you moved on to lip gloss. And tell me what you would say is the difference then between MDM Flow and your new kind of branch venture of like Beauty Co.
Okay. So yeah, Flow, it's so funny because I spent a really long time deciding whether I wanted to do skincare under the MDM Flow brand. But when I was thinking about what is really needed in the skincare space and like what's, because that's the thing, like I was saying earlier, there's like the like creative hip cool bit and then there's the scientist. And so as a scientist, I'm just like, okay, all my friends come to me about skin, male, female, my brothers, dad, cousins, everyone. And like every time something new comes into the market, it's always ridiculously unaffordable. So even if I can get someone to buy the product that they need once, they never repurchase. Yeah. Like if you're paying £50 for a cream or an oil or whatever, you're just gonna like, some products are like even more than that, especially when you want something active and that works really good.
Yeah.
So I was just like, okay, let me just like, and also even to the point where I would buy products and I'd be like, I can make this. And then at the end of last year, like I'd been coming up, like thinking of the idea for a little while. And then it got to a point last year where I was just like, I don't want to buy anything that I could make. Like if I can make it, then I want to make it.
Yeah.
So I started developing it. And then the idea of the Flow Beauty Co brand was like, this is for someone who doesn't have a clue about skincare. Like all the ingredients are broken down, everything's explained to you. Guy, girl, the branding. Like I was really I don't know if you're signed up to the Supreme newsletter, but when they send out their newsletters, it's really like stripped back. There's no, it's almost like it was like written with the first computer. So I was like, this is what I want the brand to be, like kind of like the skincare version of Supreme, just like super stripped back. It is what it is. And then, and I don't want it to be about anything else but the product. Whereas MDM Flow is so full on the brand. Like you can buy a lipstick anywhere. Like there are other brands that sell colors similar to mine, but like it's MDM Flow is very much about being part of this beauty crew, this beauty community. You don't need to tell, you don't need to break a color down to an MDM Flow girl. She buys it because of, you know, that's who she is and that's how she represents herself. Whereas the customer I'm creating for the Flow Beauty Co is just like, no, tell me what I need. Like, explain things to me, break things down to me, give me the science, give me the understanding. And I just felt like I couldn't fuse both of those into one brand. And so that's why I decided to create the Flow Beauty Co brand. And funnily enough, I started Flow Beauty Co and the branding of it when I was in a bit of a down period with MDM Flow. So it was very nice to have something to like throw all my energy into. And by the time like it was ready for launch, I'd kind of got my like excitement about MDM Flow up again. So now it's just kind of like, I won't really call them children because I don't think there's ever a time when you're like, I'm just gonna abandon this channel and work on this one. But they're just kind of like two like different parts of me, but really solve like real problems and real issues.
100%. All right, last few questions then. I love the fact that you picked up your science, that in a sense geeky hat again, and, and you're now, it's almost like you've got the image and the branding of MDM Flow, but you're still tapping into the skill based Florence kind of thing and applying it to your brand as well. And so I wanted to ask, like, how do you feel we can get more females into that science field and seeing the different points in which it can take them, rather than them just thinking, oh, I'm just going to be in this lab and this, you know, but how do you think we can get women into that space to see that there are ways you can take those skills into other industries?
Like that is like my biggest kind of like passion point outside of business. It's just getting more girls into science. And I think it's like just understanding that like everything that you use, it has a scientific background to it. And I think like I've been into schools and just been like, I run a beauty company and I'm a scientist, and just seen girls light up in the sense of like, what? Like there's beauty in science. And I think there's just certain stereotypes that are mostly perpetuated by media that kind of give this image of this like quirky, geeky guy in the lab, like doing all this stuff, and then this like bimbo girl kind of coming around and just like, you know, tipping things over because she just doesn't understand.
Yeah.
And I think like those like kind of images and that type of storytelling really impacts young people. Mm. And like luckily now there's a lot more content that is girl focused that does encourage science, but it's literally like any interest that you have, like understand the different elements of it, like understand the entertainment element, understand the marketing element, the storytelling element, but also understand the technical element of how it's made, because like that could be where your unique skill is in the actual making. Whereas I think a lot of people only especially women more so think like, oh, I can, like I'm creative, so that's all there is to me, where it's like, no, you can be creative and technical.
Exactly. Love that. Thank you so much for spending time just chatting and just sharing yourself. And I want you to kind of close with one. I know that you love quotes.
Oh, yeah.
And one quote that you kind of live by that you can share with us.
Okay. I'll go for my classic one. It doesn't matter how slow you go, just don't stop.
Just don't stop. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Thank you for listening, but thank you Flo for coming down and just sharing your story, and just wishing you all the best, man, and just love to just see you grow the brand, and man, just wishing you all the best, man. Keep winning.
Thank
keep
you
winning,
for having winning. Me this has been really cool, man.
No problem Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the podcast, Sit Down Podcast today. Make sure you subscribe. We're gonna have different guests coming down in the weeks to come, so share it with a friend, and we hope it helps. Sit Down, real lives, real conversation.